confidence is basically feeling good about yourself. And that means your authentic self, the good parts, the bad parts. Self-doubt itself is not a problem. It's okay to feel self-doubt. Even people you look up to experience self-doubt, but they just handle it differently. If we think it's this really big thing we shouldn't feel, then it holds us back. But what if we can allow the self-doubt to be there? What if we can do it with self-doubt?
Welcome to The Lavenderet Lifestyle, the podcast on personal growth and lifestyle design. My name's Eileen, and I'm here to guide you to shine as your brightest self and create your dream life. We all have a light within and the power to create a life we love. Every Sunday, we'll share thoughtful conversations exploring how we can build a better future for ourselves and our world. Life is an art. Make it your masterpiece. Hello, my loves. Welcome back to the Lavenderet Lifestyle Podcast. It's Eileen. Today's episode is on confidence. So what are the keys to building true, lasting confidence? And how can we do the inner work to overcome our self-doubt, fear of judgment, and people-pleasing once and for all? Today, I'm super excited to introduce our guest, Melinda Huves. Melinda is a top-level confidence coach where she helps women with social anxiety to build unshakable self-trust and confidence. You might know her from her rapidly growing Instagram page, Grow with Linda, where over 740,000 people seek her guidance, or from her podcast, Behind the Layers, where she guides people back to their confidence essence by peeling back the layers of self-doubt, insecurity, and fear. Through her coaching, confidence courses, and embodiment routines, she helps women step into their most empowered selves daily. Hello, Melinda. Welcome to the podcast. How are you doing today?
I'm doing so good. Thank you so much for having me here today.
Thank you so much for being here. And I appreciate you doing this late at night because you're in the Netherlands. I'm in LA. The time difference is really hard between Europe and where I am.
Right. Yes. But it works perfectly. I told you right after this call, I'm going straight to bed. But for now, we're here.
Yep. Love it. Love it. Okay. So why don't we start with your story? You are a confidence expert. You've helped so many women. But can you share how you got to where you are today? And what was the journey that led you here?
Yes, of course. So I mostly started this journey out of my own experience. So growing up, I started out pretty shy, and that only got worse in my teenage years. And I never really thought anything of it. I thought, oh, everybody just struggles with themselves so much, and especially thinks so negatively about themselves. I thought everybody kind of had that problem until I got 18 and I had a full-blown social anxiety disorder. I could not leave the house without panicking that strangers would not like me, which is still crazy to me to think back on. And it just kept getting worse. And I started to struggle with my mental health more. And that is really when I was like, okay, something needs to change. And I did not know what needed to change, but I knew something needed to change. So I went into therapy and they helped me understand my social anxiety and my mental health problems. But then still after therapy, I still struggled with myself, how I was being perceived. I feared judgment. And I was just constantly always thinking, overanalyzing what everybody was thinking. And it was draining, to be honest. And that's when my confidence journey really started. And I was like, okay, you know what? I want to feel good about myself. And there should be a way to feel confident about myself. And I just started the journey. And looking back, I didn't even realize how good I could feel about myself until I got there.
Yeah.
And that is when I decided, okay, I've gotten there. Other people are struggling as well. Let me become the expert that I needed when I was growing up, basically.
Love that. What were the turning points or the major, I guess, pivots in your journey that really helped you shift? Because you went from super shy social anxiety to now like blossomed. So What happened?
You mean like the things that helped me the most in my confidence journey?
Yeah. Yeah. Or if there were any like aha moments where you had like a turning point in your mindset or something.
Yeah. I remember also when I was 18, when I was struggling so much, I had one friend that was basically an internet friend and we were texting often and was sharing my struggles. And this person had done meditation for quite some time. And eventually he brought it to me and he was like, you know what? I think you should start with this thing called meditation. And while it's very known right now, it wasn't really known for me when I was 18.
Yeah.
So like a whole world opened up for me. And I was like, okay, let me just do this thing and see what's going to get out of it. So I did a 30-day challenge, meditating every single day. And the first weeks, they were not fun to do because my mind was going all over the place. And then after 30 days, I all of a sudden felt patience. And there was space in my mind to think differently. And that was the first moment of like, whoa, okay, I could be living a different reality. Because the moment when your mind calms down, especially if you're a person who overthinks, who worries, who has anxiety, the first time you have only a few minutes of space in your mind, you're like, whoa, what was that? Yeah. I want more of that. That was the first aha moment for me.
Okay, so how do you define what confidence is? Like, what is real confidence, not just like the faking type of confidence?
I think you can talk about that answer for quite some time because everybody thinks confidence is differently.
Yeah.
But if I were to put it in a few sentences, it would be confidence is basically feeling good about yourself. And that means your authentic self, the good parts, the bad parts. And from that place of worthiness and knowing you deserve well, and yeah, you know, you're just a good person and you like yourself in that way. From that place, you can build outer confidence. So confidence in abilities, confidence in your appearance, confidence in social settings. But if that deep-rooted inner confidence isn't there, of simply you liking yourself and feeling good about yourself, then the outer confidence is not going to come either, I would say.
Basically, you're saying everything that people see on the outside is the true root is you have to like yourself. You have to feel good about yourself.
Yeah, because it's so easy to mask, right?
Yes. I think a lot of people can fake the confidence, but that's the true difference. Let's go deeper into that. It's what you call self-image, right? So how does that affect how we shape our lives? And what is the first step to like healing your self-image? Because I would say most people have a hard time truly liking themselves.
Yeah. Yeah. And I get it. I've been there. And I also think that if people are going through that, it's part of the process. I think almost every human being goes through a period of their lives when they're just confused with themselves or don't like parts about themselves. So first of all, if people are listening and they are going through that, I feel it's normal in the confidence process. But about the self-image, so basically how I phrase the self-image is the beliefs you hold about yourself, about how you perceive yourself. And that is never based on facts. It's based on beliefs. And if we have negative beliefs about ourselves, no amount of compliments, of achievements is actually going to change that. So how do we heal that? That is the most important part.
Yeah.
Is first, the first step is actually being honest about what the belief is. And that can be so difficult because it's so easy to say, well, I struggle with confidence because I feel like I'm not good enough. And for many people, that is a belief. But oftentimes, the belief is a little bit more painful. For me, it was the belief that nobody liked me. And admitting that to myself hurts so much. But that is the first step of healing the self-image, to learn what is my actual self-image that I maybe do not want to know right now.
Yeah. And what is your process for getting there? Because like you said, it's oftentimes a belief that is so difficult for us to even admit, or most people don't even realize they have this belief. Like what does the work look like? Do you like guide people to go back to like the first memory, or I guess, how does that work?
Yeah, you don't necessarily need to go back to the first memory, because if you need to go back to the first memory, you often need guidance, but you can also start this work without guidance. So I always start off with a few questions. And the most important one is, what do you fear others judge you for, dislike you for? That is the biggest sign into how you think about yourself. So if you fear that people think you are dumb, you think you're dumb. I feared nobody liked me because I thought I was not likable. So what you fear others are thinking about you is a direct mirror of what is going on inside of here. So just what I always love to do is asking a few of those questions, like, what do you think about yourself when you fail? What do you think others will judge about you? And just writing down a lot of short sentences. So I'm not good enough. I'm dumb. People do not like me. And you can create a very long list. It's not a fun activity, but it's a needed one.
Yeah.
I always get, when I do this with clients one-on-one, at the end of the session, they're like, oh, that did not feel good. I'm like, no, I know. It does not feel good. But if you then read out loud those sentences, it becomes a feeling exercise. So the ones that feel the most icky, like, ouch, I did not like saying that, those are the ones that are the strongest. And then I always encourage you to pick one, two, or three beliefs and start with those.
Yeah.
The other ones can come later.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, my loves, let's take a break for today's sponsor, Live Beyond Your Label by Erin Carey. Have you noticed how we live in a world that loves to categorize everything, including us? We get labels for our strengths, our struggles, our roles. While some can be helpful initially, they can also become barriers that keep us from seeing the fullness of who we are. What if instead of being defined by separate categories, you could see yourself as complete, where your physical health, emotional patterns, and spiritual life work together as one integrated system? Health coach and functional nutritionist Erin Carey addresses this in her new book, Live Beyond Your Label. After her decade-long healing journey, she's developed a four-step approach that helps you create new patterns for handling stress, identify root causes behind symptoms like anxiety and depression, and develop healthier relationships with food and your body. Her method weaves together science, scripture, and lived experience to help you practice healthy emotional regulation with a renewed perspective in mind, body, and spirit. Live Beyond Your Label is now available online at bookstores or visit erinbcarey.com for more information. Let's move on to the next step then. Once you have like that belief, like, I'm not good enough, I'm not likable or anything, what is your process to work through it?
One process is going into the subconscious, as you said, like going back to the moment when the belief was created and changing it there. But if you want to do this alone, I also teach my clients the reframing method. And basically how this goes, I have to explain a little bit about the mind, how I see it. So when I work with the self-image, I always say your mind is a closet and that closet is filled with boxes and every single box has a belief on it. And that's just, okay, that's how it works. And then the mind, of course, it seeks proof for the things it believes. So the boxes grow bigger. And with a negative self-image, you can just imagine you have one big box in your mind with a negative belief about yourself. And over the years, you've been growing it by seeking all of these pieces of proof that prove the negative belief. And with the reframing method, we do not remove the box because you cannot fully remove all the memories that happened. But what we do is we create a new box, a very tiny box in that closet with the opposite positive belief. So for me, that was people love to be around me instead of people do not like me. And the first process to kind of open up the mind for the new self-image is to purposefully seek proof for the new belief and ignore the quote unquote proof for the negative belief. Mm-hmm. So, and you can do that in a journal. Yeah. It's as simple as that. So I would carry this little journal in my pocket, and every time somebody smiled at me on the street, I would write it down. Every time when I had a fun chat with somebody, I wrote it down. When I got a compliment, I wrote it down. And it is a kind of a forceful process in the beginning because your mind wants to look for all the ways that these people didn't actually like you because that's the old belief. And then you have to force yourself to not look at it and focus on the positive. Yeah. And if you do this, after 2 weeks, you can notice your confidence already increasing, which is insane. And if you keep doing it, eventually it becomes a default. The positive box becomes bigger than a negative box. And then you can choose, because the reality is in the middle of these boxes, I always feel like.
Yes. I love that. It really is like whatever you feed grows, right? If you focus on like nurturing the positive thought, the positive box, then that's eventually going to be the one that grows stronger than the negative box. But our whole lives, we've been nurturing the negative box, basically.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's so difficult to stop nurturing the negative because it is comfortable. It's comfortable to stay the same. It's comfortable. And it was for me as well. Like sometimes you have to really feel pain before you're like, okay, let's do something different this time.
Yeah. I want to kind of go into different challenges that most people often face. Like the first one would be like self-doubt. And this is doubting ourselves from taking risks, taking big leaps, or even just like small things like doubting that we have the ability to like start a good conversation, right? It could be anything. A lot of people just second guess themselves all the time. And so what advice do you have for people who really struggle with self-doubt?
Oh, good one. That's a really good one. I think the first thing I would like to say about that is that self-doubt itself is not a problem. It's okay to feel self-doubt. Even people you look up to experience self-doubt, but they just handle it differently. Because I have self-doubt sometimes. It's a really great way to navigate what is for me, what isn't for me, what I still need to overcome. And do you still experience it sometimes as well?
All the time.
Right?
Yeah, of course.
That it's part of the process. And I think if we think it's this really big thing we shouldn't feel, then it holds us back. But what if we can allow the self-doubt to be there? What if we can do it with self-doubt?
Yeah.
I think that is the biggest thing. Don't wait until the self-doubt disappears, because it's we just kind of
disappear. Yeah. That's so true.
Yeah.
How do you process your own self-doubt?
I really rationalize it. So if the self-doubt comes up, I allow it to be there. I'm like, oh, I feel doubtful about this product I'm going to launch or this event I need to do. And I allow the doubt to be there. If there's a little bit of insecurity, I allow it to be there. And then I explore it. Is it based in fear because it's something new? Is it based in unalignment because it's not really for me? Or is it based in a false narrative? Maybe I fear I'm going to mess up, but I never mess up that specific thing. So I know, oh, it's irrational. And I kind of talk my way through it like a best friend would. Yeah. So I don't punish myself. Like, you shouldn't feel this way. Come on. I actually talk to myself like a friend. I'm like, oh, that feeling is not nice, but what can I say differently to myself? So that is one thing I love to do. And if the self-doubt really creeps in, and it's an important thing I still want to do, yeah. I love to or take some time for myself so I can really feel grounded. The moment you feel grounded and safe in yourself, it's easier to face the self-doubt with confidence. But my quickest hack I often do is embodiment. So I do visualizations where I embody the version of myself who does that thing with joy. They can still feel nervous, but there's joy behind it.
Yeah, yeah. I love what you said. I guess for me, it's also like the self-doubt will always be there. Sometimes I just have to allow myself to feel it and know that I might feel better tomorrow, right? Tomorrow is another day. Because sometimes it's so strong that I'm like, okay, it's not something I want to fight right now. Like, I just happen to feel this way because maybe I saw something that made me feel bad about myself or doubt myself. Whenever we have, or I guess for me, whenever I have self-doubt, it proves that that thing is important to me so much that I care.
Yes.
Because that's what your fear is telling you. It's telling you that this is something you care about. You're pushing your comfort zone here. And that's why it's scary. And that's why you doubt, can I really do this? But that's a good sign that you're pushing yourself. And so knowing that that process, that journey is always going to have its ups and downs and emotions, but just doing it anyway, because like you said, it's something that you want to do. And yeah. So the lesson for everyone is like, it's there. You just have to work with it.
Yes. And yeah. I love what you say. It guides you into the direction of what you deem important.
Yes.
Because if I would do like a swimming competition right now, I'm not going to feel nervous. Like, I know I'm not going to be good at it. Like, I don't really care, to be honest, because I don't want to be good.
I was like, are you a really good swimmer or something?
No,
like,
no, I'm not. That's why I wouldn't feel self-doubt, because it doesn't say anything about me if I lose, because I don't expect myself to win.
Yeah, you're right.
And I don't want to win. So I don't care about it.
Yeah. It's not even self-doubt. It's a knowing. Like, I know I'm going to be the last one. That's so funny. The next challenge that we often struggle with is like fear of judgment from others. Because as humans, as social creatures, we care about what others think of us. It's hard. So what is your advice for that?
One that I always loved is make your purpose bigger or more, make your purpose more important than their opinions. And it always pushes me through. Like, if I am afraid people will judge me for starting a podcast or starting a YouTube, I just ask myself, okay, is that opinion, that potential opinion that might not even be a reality, is that important enough for me not to try this? And the answer is always no. The answer is, if you really look to what is important, it's never, ever the opinions of other people and the judgment of other people. And just asking myself that simple question of what is actually important here helps me to kind of push through either way, not feel held back.
Yeah.
So that is the first one. The second one is, once again, what you fear they are judging you on, you probably judge yourself for.
Exactly.
Right? If you feel like, oh, they're going to think it's embarrassing if I don't succeed, maybe you think it's embarrassing if you don't succeed. Yeah. So there is the work you need to do. It's not about controlling the opinions of other people. It's about, what do you actually think and say to yourself?
Yes, that's so true. Because if you truly thought it was not embarrassing to fail, totally okay, you still like yourself at the end of it, why would you care about what other people think? Like, yes, at the end of the day, what matters most is what you think about yourself.
For sure. Yeah.
Really, it's not about anything about outside of you. It's really just working on your own judgments on yourself.
Yeah, for sure. And of course, if somebody actually judges you, that still hurts a little bit. But the majority of the time, that's not going to happen because you cannot read their thoughts. And the amount of times people actually come to you and judge you in your face, it's not really going to happen that much. It happens. I think you might know as well. I know on social media, sometimes if you hit the wrong algorithm.
It does happen, but not as often and not as bad as you really think in your head. And honestly, the lesson I've learned is, like, most people don't really care about what you're doing. They're worried about their own lives and themselves. They don't have the energy to worry about you so much, unless they're like truly terrible people. But if that's the case, like, literally just ignore it. Not worth your energy.
That is so true. Like, people have this, they call it the spotlight effect. Like, they think people are always thinking about them, always watching them. But if you think about yourself, how often are you doing that to other people?
Yeah.
I'm not. Yeah. You're often thinking about yourself, your life, what you need to do today.
Yeah. Okay. So going back to, if you realize the true issue is you are judging yourself, right? Like, oh, I'm scared to try because I think it'll look so embarrassing if I fail. Oh, it's cringe. I don't want to be cringe. What is your advice for people? Because I think a lot of young people struggle with being afraid to look cringe.
I get that. Yeah. And I would love to say embrace it. There's nothing wrong with it. But I know if I'm going to say it, they're still going to be like, ugh.
I know.
I'm not sure.
It's part
I'm
of not life. Gonna do it. And you have to go through it. And then eventually you're like, that was fine. It wasn't that bad.
Right? And I have this amazing method for that as well. It's called the courage exposure method. So maybe people know, like, exposure therapy, like putting yourself in situations that are embarrassing or difficult or scary. The more you do that, the more resilient you become as well. But I had social anxiety. So for me to put myself in a scary situation was a no-go zone because I would get a panic attack and I did not want that. So I created the courage exposure method, which is basically the most gentle way to face your fears and still do it and feel good afterwards, most importantly. Instead of feeling overwhelmed, you feel good. So basically what I love to do is, if you have a goal, for example, maybe somebody wants to post online, you make that the scariest thing that you can do. So maybe posting a reel online and you put it on number 10, then write down 9 other things you can do that are less scary. And eventually you get to number 1, and that is not that scary. It's uncomfortable, but manageable.
Yes.
Maybe it is starting the Instagram account. Maybe the second step is to post a story. Maybe the second step is to post a quote without your face. And what you're doing is, like, all of them are a little bit uncomfortable, but they are preparing you for the big uncomfortable thing you're about to do. But if you have done 9 things already, and those are 9 small wins of you getting outside of your comfort zone, you're going to feel a buzz of excitement when you get to point number 10. You're like, okay, I'm going to do it. And that one helps so much with building the confidence and overcoming that fear of being judged, being cringe, because you've allowed yourself to be quote unquote judged or quote unquote cringy a little bit at a time.
See, I love that actually. It's so you're saying if there's one scary thing that people think is too much, then it's just build, like do the 9 things leading up to it that are less scary. That makes so much sense logically. Everything is just a baby step. And I want to highlight that you mentioned you want to have those small wins because each time you have a win, it builds your confidence.
For sure. Yeah. Yes.
I love that.
Sometimes just one step is enough. So I had a client and she really wanted to go to a cafe alone, read a book, get a coffee. And she went into the city and then she headed home. She was like, no, I cannot do it. And I asked her, okay, what was going on? She was like, yeah, it was a really busy place in the city. And I don't know, I was just very afraid. And I asked her, okay, what was one step easier? And then she told me, oh, wait, there was actually another cafe at the end of the street where nobody actually comes. And I could actually sit there. And she did that. And all of a sudden, she could also sit at the other place.
Yeah.
Because she allowed herself to take the easy step before taking the big step.
Yes. Makes so much sense.
Yeah.
Time for another break to thank our sponsor, Shopify. When you support a small business, you can feel the love in every detail. The thoughtful packaging, the quality, even how they respond to your questions. Maybe you've wondered what it would feel like to be on the other side of that exchange, to create something that brings intention into someone's day. If that thought has crossed your mind more than once, it might be worth listening to. Sometimes our hearts know what we're ready for before our minds catch up. When you're ready to honor that calling, having the right support makes all the difference. For millions of creators, that support comes from Shopify, supporting businesses around the world and 10% of all e-commerce in the US. With hundreds of beautiful templates, you can build a store that reflects your style, no coding required. Their marketing tools help you reach people who connect with what you create. Shopify manages inventory, payments, shipping, and returns so you can focus on creating. Turn those dreams into and give them the best shot at success with Shopify. Sign up for your $1 per month trial and start selling today at shopify.com/TLL. Go to shopify.com/TLL. Again, that's shopify.com/TLL. Another one that people struggle with is people pleasing. So let's talk about that. How can we finally break free of our need to please?
I think the first step to realize is that it's just, you're often doing it out of safety, right? We want to be liked. We want to be loved. We want to be accepted to feel safe. So this is kind of to remind people that if they struggle with people pleasing and they're kind of fed up with themselves, just see it as a friend trying to protect you. So work with it once again, instead of against it. Because if you ignore it and just try to stop pleasing, it's going to scream because it wants you to listen again.
Okay. So it's another one that you have to embrace, that
for sure
you're not going to erase it from your life.
No. Eventually you can. Uh-huh. But yeah, these are also multiple steps you can go through. The first step is to ask, okay, what do I fear will happen if I stop pleasing others?
Yeah.
And if there is a subconscious belief, you can work with a subconscious belief. For example, I fear people would dislike me. Okay, well, then it's clear that you have a self-image that you are not likable.
Yeah.
Or you are afraid that conflict will be created, or that you will not be actually physically safe, and that those are more serious beliefs to work with. And that is why I always advise to work slowly with these things, because if it's just a fear of not being liked, okay, you can overcome that a little bit easier than actually feeling physically endangered or having insane conflict. Like, everybody has different traumas around that.
True.
That is one aspect. If you really want to go deep, work with the beliefs that are rooted in it.
Yeah.
And the two other steps is, one is nervous system regulation. Once, because if you are pleasing others because you want to feel safe, what if you already bring that safety into your body before you go out into the world, which makes it easier to actually say no to things because your body is not in kind of fight or flight mode of like, oh crap, I need to agree right now.
Yes. But doesn't, like, you know, I would imagine you can feel safe, but when someone says something or does something, your body then goes into fight or flight. Tell me about nervous system regulation. How do you guide people to do it?
In that moment, the reason why I would say, like, practice nervous system regulation beforehand is so you actually already teach your body that you can slow it down and calm it down so that when this situation comes up, you have a little bit more confidence in the practices that you are about to do. And indeed, those can be very simple. These can be watching your breath. These can be relaxing your shoulders and relaxing your jaw, focusing on the breath, or sometimes just actually taking a pause. So if you are at work and somebody asks you, hey, can you do this list of things? And you already feel like, I cannot say no. Create a pause for yourself. So say, hey, can I come back to you in 15 minutes? I have to think about it, or I have to check some things in my calendar. Maybe you can go to the bathroom. You can do some nervous system regulation techniques, maybe some shaking of the body so you can calm yourself.
Yeah.
And then you can think of the answer like, okay, I have to say no, but I want to do it in a gentle way. Uh-huh. And you go back into the situation.
Yeah.
I always love to pause. If it's too much to regulate in the moment, which I get as somebody with social anxiety in the past, I couldn't just focus on my breath and go on with my day. I had to get out, regulate myself, and get back in. And that's also allowed.
Yeah. Wow. I love that. That's a great tip.
Yeah. And also, this is kind of the exposure method as well. Build it up. So start by saying small no's here and there and just sit with that discomfort, because I can tell you it's going to be uncomfortable, but just because it's uncomfortable doesn't mean it's wrong. It's just getting used to.
Because I'm naturally a people pleaser type too, but I had to learn in this journey. But it reminds me of how in the beginning, it's so hard to say no that you want to like put a bunch of excuses around it. You want to make something up to make it sound better versus just saying straight up no and not having to give a reason. Those are two different kinds of no's, right?
Yeah.
But it, like you said, it takes some exposure. Like maybe you begin with like that insecure way of saying no. And then you slowly, slowly build it up to the point where you can just say no and not have to give a reason and feel okay about it.
Yeah. Exactly. You can take some in-between steps.
Yeah.
How was that for you to kind of navigate that?
I think it just takes time. I honestly am not sure what else I did, but it's like I think as I grew more confident in myself, my boundaries, like my priorities in life, it became easier to say no. I think before you're clear on yourself and what's important to you, it's easy to say yes to things that are not important just because a part of you wants that person to like you or something. But I guess the more sure I was about myself and my own priorities, the easier it is to say no. And then with practice, it became easier to say no, like a neutral no, not like a, oh my God, I can't, I'm sorry, I can't, or make up an excuse.
That is so good as well, indeed, to kind of know what is important to you. What are your values?
Yeah.
Because I read this book. It's called Essentialism. I don't remember the writer anymore. But he basically explained whenever you say yes to one thing, you're automatically saying no to another because you cannot do it all. So if you say yes to something that you do not really care about, you maybe have to say no to something you will care about. And that is why it's so important to know what you care about, because otherwise you're going to say yes to everyone and everything and you end up doing the things you don't really want to do.
Yeah. So ultimately, it's learning to like live for yourself. And the more you honor yourself and what you actually want, the easier it is to just, you know, go through life doing what you want to do and saying no to the things that are not for you.
Yeah, exactly. I love that.
Yeah. Another thing that I guess we can cover is like overthinking and anxiety, like someone who has an overactive brain and can't shut it down.
Yeah.
So what advice do you have for someone like that?
It's not a short journey. I always like to start with that. So don't expect to do like a few tools and then you should be healed. Sometimes I get that idea from social media sometimes where everybody's like, just try this one thing.
Yeah.
But it's an answer people likely don't want to hear, but it's getting out of your mind. Because sometimes with anxiety, we have to believe that you can think your way out of it. You can think your way into safety. If you just think enough, you will have more control and it will go better. But that is not the case. Oftentimes, it's actually the opposite that will happen. So what really helped me in the past is practices to get out of my mind. And you have the practices like meditation, journaling to actually stop the overthinking and maybe bring a moment of quiet or putting it on paper, but also engaging in things that will make you stop thinking. So I used to love to play the piano because if I'm focused on understanding how to play this piece of music, I cannot overthink about what is going to happen tomorrow or that conversation that happened today. I do not really have space in that in my mind because I'm in a state of flow. For other people, this might be singing, painting, being with friends, maybe a walk in nature.
Yeah.
And that is also one, actually. Movement is one of the easiest ways to get out of the mind, even though if you're stuck in overthinking, you do not want to go on that walk. I do not want to go on that walk. But every time when you do, you come back calmer.
yes. This can apply to like overthinking before something happens and also after something happens. Because I know some people, I do this sometimes, right? When you have like an awkward situation or something or like a conversation, and then after you just keep thinking about it. You're running it through in your head. So you're saying when someone's struggling with overthinking, whether it's like anxiety before something or after, just replace with some sort of activity that gets you out of your mind.
Yes, for sure. Because that is the quickest solution. Of course, if you face this on a daily basis, do the inner work, like the belief work, the self-love work, all of these things. But those things take time. You don't need to, or you shouldn't want to rush these things too much. And that is why I always feel like do both.
Yeah.
Do the inner work, but don't stay stuck there, because then you're going to overthink about all the inner work you need to do and you're still not living. And I think that's the most important thing. We want to stop overthinking because we want to start living. So what if we start living now and we figure out our healing journey as we go?
Yeah. Let's talk about more the journey to self-love. What were the big shifts that happened for you?
The first one was really allowing myself to like myself, because sometimes there's this kind of stigma around it that if you are too full of yourself, it becomes arrogant, or you won't see your flaws and you become delusional. And first of all, that's not the case. And really learning that I was allowed to like myself and this wasn't a form of arrogance, that really opened the doors for me to be like, okay, I can take this one seriously. And I think the second aha moment for me was like loving the good parts about yourself is easy, right? You will start to learn like, oh, I'm actually quite fun in public, or I really look good in this dress. I love these parts about myself. But the most difficult part and the most transformative part is liking the parts of yourself that you want to hide from the world. And I always have two different ways of going about it.
Yeah.
The first one is appearance. And that is mostly because, especially as teenagers, when we grow up, we are so focused on our appearance. And now with social media as well, it's so easy to compare your appearance and be like, I do not like this about myself. I do not like that about myself. And that was really, I think, the first thing I started to work on in my self-love journey. And how I did that was actually, once again, kind of exposing the things I did not like about myself. So I felt insecure without makeup, so I stopped wearing makeup. I felt insecure about the hairs on my arms, so I stopped shaving. So I actually exposed myself and allowed myself to actually see me as I am. And I started loving myself as I am. And that's really the appearance part.
Yeah, I see.
That is the internal part, right? Yes. That is the maybe the habits that you do not like about yourself or the personality traits, because everybody has positive and negative traits about them. And that was the most transformative part, to actually look at those negative parts that I didn't really like about myself sometimes and actually start embracing them.
Mm.
And the funny thing is, the moment I started embracing them, they couldn't be used against me anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So funny backstory, but I have a sister, and as sisters, sometimes you get into fights and you just say things to each other. And she would always call me a hypocrite. And that used to hurt me so much because it was a part of me that I didn't want to look at. And then I realized, okay, maybe sometimes I am a little bit of a hypocrite in some situations. And the moment I embraced that about myself and she started making comments about that, it didn't hurt anymore. I was like, yeah, that is part of who I am. And it's not the best part, but I am aware.
Because you know and you accept it.
Yeah, and that's the most powerful thing, because if somebody says something to you about yourself and it hurts, of course, somebody shouldn't be saying that to you, but it's not necessarily like they are the problem, because it hurts something in here. There was already a wound to begin with. You didn't want to look at it.
Yeah, I always say that people are your mirrors, right? Like whatever they say, if it hurts you, it means you believe some part of it. Like, yes. Because if you didn't believe anything of what they said, or if you agreed with what they said in a way where you embrace it and you said you like love, you learn to love it, then you'd be like, yes, like it doesn't hurt as much, because you're like, yeah, you're right. It's true. And so, yeah, I see. Let's talk more about your embodiment routine, because I think it can be so powerful to get into that. So what is this routine and why is it so effective?
The embodiment routine, that is something I created last year. So I noticed eventually I was holding myself back last year in my confidence journey, because I had these beliefs still that if I would appear more confident, I would make others feel uncomfortable, and I didn't want that. And eventually, beginning last year, I was like, no, wait, I actually need to face that and actually become my most confident self. So I started to create an embodiment routine. So instead of embodying every now and then, actually doing it every single day. And what it looks like is simply first getting clarity. So what do you want to embody? What kind of life do you want to create? So I always start with my values, what I enjoy out of life. And then I write down, okay, what is my dream life in the next few months? And who do I need to become? And I get crystal clear on who I need to become. So how do I dress? How do I feel like? How do I interact with other people? How do I start my morning? What are the emotions that are present? And then I get into a meditation, 15 minutes in the morning. I sit down and I just start visualizing that version of myself. And most importantly, I tap into how she feels. So it's very common to do this in the manifestation world, but I started to manifest that embodiment. And I was actually surprised by how quick this worked, because I had to meet the family of my boyfriend. And for the first time, I don't know why, I felt shy. I felt a little bit uncomfortable and nervous, and I hadn't felt that in a while. So for 2 days, I did the routine, 2 days in a row. And then the third day, I met the parents, and exactly how I was visualizing it, I actually felt.
Yeah.
So it can help in as little as 1 day, 2 days, 3 days. It's actually insane.
Yeah. I think feelings are kind of like a portal to your future self, because if you can feel it now, then you're that person already. And then everything else aligns to fit that.
Yes, exactly. And I think it's the quickest shortcut that you can do. To be honest, you could even do it in 3 minutes a day. It's just about starting your day with an intention. Okay, how do I want to feel today? Because if you feel that way, you will act that way, and then you will manifest a reality. Like the actions will create that reality.
Yeah. I think the key thing is like the consistency of you doing it every day, because showing up to do that, it's like, I don't know, it just becomes so much stronger.
For sure. You go so insanely quick. Eventually, last year, my manifestations came in so quickly that sometimes I was freaking out.
I love that. That's crazy. Okay. What other favorite tools or resources do you turn to, I guess, rewire your mind and boost your confidence?
The majority of it we've already spoken, but I just always put it in a roadmap. Okay. So whenever I help people build confidence, the first step is to get back to that inner safety. So you just feel good and safe in your body. Then we do the belief work, and this can be subconscious belief work that I guide people through, or the reframing method where we work with the self-image. Then I always start with the embodiment work, because I believe that you can only become something you felt before, especially if you struggle with confidence. It's so difficult to let go of your old self to become your new self if you have no idea what that person feels like. And then I often do the exposure.
Mm,
and
yeah,
if you do those four in a row, it's guaranteed that you're going to increase in confidence. And the funny thing is that I created this roadmap for people with nervousness and social anxiety, but it's still a roadmap I use every single time when I need to face something new, because confidence is an endless journey.
Absolutely. And I love that your roadmap starts from within and then the outside. Like the exposure is actually testing it in the world, but yeah, you have everything from in and out.
Actually getting results is also really good for your confidence.
Yes.
But I truly believe that you first need to do the inner work, because if you're just going to do the outer work, you might be chasing achievement to feel good about yourself.
Yes.
And if the achievement then doesn't come, you have to start at zero again. So I always start with the basis, because if that is stable and you feel at something that's important to you, yes, the feeling might suck, but you still feel good about yourself because you've done all the work before.
Yes. And one extra thing I'd like to add about the confidence journey is, like, as you go through life experience, like as you do these exposure things, like even though you might fail in the future, you have all those experiences to kind of back you up. I feel like in life, you just get stronger and stronger, because whether you won or failed in the past, like that experience is yours. Like no one could take it away, right? So it's almost like you add a little extra, I don't know, like something on top of a mountain, like, oh, I did that. I did that. I did that. I'm not really proud of that. That was embarrassing, but I did it. You frame life that way, you're just building your confidence and your sense of self.
Yeah, I love that. And also, it is such a powerful thing to fail and add that to the mountain and just keep going.
Exactly.
I think that is what confidence is. It's like deciding, like, that sucked, but
I did it. I think a lot of people frame failure as I lost something, or I wasted time, or I did something I regret, or whatever. But if you just frame it as that added to my life experience, I learned so much from it, right? I grew from that. You grow more from your failures than from your wins.
For sure.
Whether it's a win or a failure, I always see it as a plus.
Yes, you're so right. And I'm curious about you as well, because you have done so much throughout your career, right? The podcast, YouTube, your own products. How has your confidence journey been for you during this whole process?
Like you, I'm also someone who's naturally really shy. And I used to be afraid to speak up, afraid to make friends, afraid to talk. And I started YouTube with music, actually, like singing. And I think because of YouTube, that helped me build my confidence, because I was posting videos in secret. Nobody in my life, none of my friends knew I liked to sing. But I would post videos in secret because it was easy for a shy girl to post a video to strangers on the internet. And then once I started getting some positive feedback and some exposure, right, some experience, that built my confidence enough to tell my friends, like, hey, I do like to sing. And then it built my confidence to, like, actually get on a stage and perform something. And then that built my confidence to do a little bit more and more. And even with, like, making YouTube videos, talking to a camera, I was so bad in the beginning. Everyone starts off so awkward, so shy. If you look at the way I talk and the way I hold myself in my videos like 10 years ago, it's so different from who I am now. I think the journey, as you go with practice, with exposure, you just become more confident. And that's, like I said, whether it's a win or a fail, like, I learned from it. Like, it helped me grow.
I love that. It's insane how similar our journeys are with that. I did the exact same with my Instagram.
Oh, really?
Yes. I blocked everybody I knew. And the moment I felt a little bit like, okay, I feel more comfortable in being perceived.
Yeah.
Then I send it to my friends.
I know. It's so funny how it's always easier to send it to, like, random people you don't know.
For sure. It hurts less. If strangers dislike it, it really hurts less than your friends. And in the end, your friends are not going to dislike it. But I did feel the fear.
I do want to ask you about your community and your content on Instagram. What grounds you and guides you as you create for your platforms?
I love that. And that's such a valid question, because right now I'm kind of refining that. So I love that you asked that. In the beginning, when I started posting, I was actually just posting my own journey. So that guided me. And eventually, when I started to feel more confident and felt more comfortable in guiding others, I just started to speak to my younger self. That's all I did. Every time I would just sit in front of the camera and I would think of, okay, what did I need to hear? Or maybe what do I need to hear right now? What am I struggling with right now? And then I just started to talk to the camera as a friend. And it came so naturally to me to make all of those videos, because they were made with a sense of love. because I loved my old self and I love guiding myself right now. So I was talking to myself and all of these people start to resonate and they also felt the love. And I think that is what made it so effortless.
Yes.
In the beginning.
I love that. And then you mentioned you're refining it now.
The last few months, I hit burnout and my brain just stopped working. And I kind of lost that spark and that kind of love for creating. And there were just no ideas in my brain, which was so weird to experience. And now that I'm getting that back, step by step, I'm trying to remember, okay, what did I do? Why did it feel so effortless in the beginning? And why did it stop feeling effortless? Mm. So, for example, the moment Instagram became my job, all of a sudden there was also pressure behind it. And I think that also had an impact on how I was showing up online. All of a sudden, I felt like I should show up a different way. And that is not in alignment with your authentic self.
Yeah.
So that was kind of putting more pressure on me. And then I had just too much on my plate. So right now, I'm refining that. And I actually feel really, really good about refining that. And I'm happy you asked that question because that helps me as well.
No, honestly, it's the content creator journey is like that, right? You start off, you're pure and you're inspired. And then there's inevitably going to be points where you're not inspired and maybe even burnt out. And so it's creativity is like an ebb and flow. There's seasons, the way I see it.
I love that you say that. So how do you go through that? So if you're in a low, how do you move through that low?
I think you have to embrace and accept that you're not going to be as maybe like you're not going to create as much content with the same energy that you had before. You have to be okay with slowing down. There's beauty in the lows because the lows give you time to reflect and time to re-strategize, shift or pivot. The lows give you opportunity to explore other things, you know? So I think there's always beauty in every season. That's what I've learned. I know the lows are not always easy to deal with. And I've been through like several in this career.
Yeah.
But looking back, I'm always like, okay, that made sense. Because I wasn't as inspired, I made time to travel and I went to seek new experiences or I was reading more books during this time. Or there's always some good that came out of it.
I love that. I'm really taking that with me from today's chat.
I hope you look
at that, that is so powerful. I love it.
Yeah, because there's beauty in everything. If you're always busy, always like creatively inspired, like when are you going to make the time to like rest and read books that are on your to-be read list? Like when are you going to make the time to do random things and take, you know, sometimes you just need that spontaneity in life, space for something new to enter.
I love that. Yes. Thank you.
Yeah, of course. Okay. So now I kind of want you to paint the picture of what your confidence feels, whether you want to lead us in how you think about your embodiment session, because a lot of our listeners want to be able to obviously be super confident, super vibrant. And you are someone who lives that. So what does it feel like? Paint the picture so that we can feel it with you.
Yeah. Okay. Is it okay if I guide them through a very short visualization?
Absolutely.
I always love to prep the mind. So for the listeners out there, what would you do differently if you felt confident? Maybe today or in a week or a specific thing you are thinking about. Maybe you need to give a presentation or you need to go out in the city and do something fun. Just take one moment, maybe just your day, and just ask yourself, what would I do differently and how would I act differently if I would feel confident right now? And it's funny for me, for example, that is when I was struggling with social anxiety, if I would feel more comfortable, I would actually make jokes with strangers. So the moment you have something, you're like, this could be something, just go ahead and close your eyes and just take a few deep breaths in through the nose and out through the mouth. Again, one in through the nose and out through the mouth. Just allowing yourself to settle in. So relaxing the shoulders, relaxing the jaw. And I want you to picture that one thing, maybe that one activity, that one event, or that one moment that you just thought about. and start visualizing yourself carefree, confident in that moment. And while you do that, just make some space for excitement, for authenticity, or maybe play to come in. Just allow yourself to feel that feeling and relax into it. And ask yourself, where in your body do you feel your confidence rising right now? Can be a small place. Just focus on that now. Breathing some air into that space. Maybe it has a color, this energy. Maybe the color is gentle or vibrant. Just picture that confidence color in your body. And with each breath, allow it to just take up a little bit more space. Feel it spread through your body. And allow yourself to actually enjoy that feeling. And know that if you can feel that feeling now, you can feel it anytime you need it. So you can go ahead and take a deep breath in through the nose and one out through the mouth and just open your eyes when you're ready.
Thank you.
Yes. How was that for you, or what did you notice?
It was nice. When you were saying the color, I immediately thought my confidence is like yellow. And I think I got inspiration from when you said you make jokes with strangers. Because I think when you're confident, you're very playful. You're having fun and you're not afraid to like be funny or fun with people, even if it, you know, I guess previously, if it was like a stressful situation or like a socially difficult situation, like if I'm able to like hold my head up high, my shoulders back and have this like confident stance while joking and having fun and being playful, I think that's what that feels like to me.
Yeah, I love that. I think like the biggest or the highest state of confidence is either play or flow. I think there's no higher state of confidence than that.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, especially even people on stage, if you're doing a big presentation, if they can be playful or they're in flow,
yeah,
that is confidence.
It makes me think confidence is softer than I originally thought. Because I think before you thought confidence was like strong and bold and forceful, but it doesn't have to be. Instead, true confidence is like relaxed.
And especially for introverts and people who are more shy, having to think that confidence is this very big thing that is maybe loud can feel quite daunting. Like, I do not want to have that kind of confidence because the idea of it drains me. It's not authentic confidence to me. It might be for someone else.
You can have quiet and gentle confidence, but you're strong within, but you're calm and relaxed on the outside.
Yes, yes, exactly.
All right, Melinda, we have a couple minutes. So what would be the final message that you want to leave our listeners with today?
To really embrace the ebbs and flows of life, but also of confidence. And confidence is a journey that ebbs and flows as well, just like any, what you beautifully said. So ride the highs and enjoy the highs. But if there is a low, don't freak out. Don't think something is wrong with you, that you should be someone different or should do something different. Just see what you can learn from it. Maybe what you can do differently, but also allow the lows to be there without freaking out. That is especially something I had to learn.
I think we often think the lows will last forever. That's what's so scary about them. But they never last forever.
They never, never last forever. Oh, that was a rhyme.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that is one thing that we already shared so much value and inspiration. And I think just to allow the lows to be there and have trust in yourself that it will go up again, that is also confidence, trusting that it will get better, not knowing when or how, but that is also, that is the confidence you can radiate in your lows. Just trust.
Yes. Love that so much. Okay, lastly, where can we find you online?
You can follow me on Instagram at growwithlinda, where I share a lot of tips and my life. I also started my confidence letters, which are free newsletters for people to just get inspiration every Monday to start their week feeling good about themselves mm-hmm. and motivated. And I also started a podcast called Behind the Layers, where I also take people behind the layers, because I truly believe everybody is confident in their essence. You just need to peel back the layers to find that again. So that is how we can connect in the future.
Amazing. Thank you so much for sharing your wisdom today. I think we covered a lot. It was really good.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I absolutely loved it.
Thanks so much for listening to The Lavender Lifestyle. If you like the podcast, please share your support by leaving a review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. You can also subscribe to our podcast YouTube channel at youtube.com/lavenderlifestyle and follow our Instagram at lavenderlifestyle. Sending you so much love. Bye.